As the Trump administration increases immigration enforcement, South Dakota faith leaders take calls from worried residents. From SDPB, today is Thursday, February 20th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, President Trump has promised to deport people living in the U.S. without permission. Early executive orders and increased ICE activity have some South Dakotans wondering about their status and about their rights. Today, we'll talk with Spanish-speaking faith leaders about what's happening in the Sioux Falls region. Plus, we head to the center of the state for a conversation with a bishop whose experiences in Texas are informing the current events in South Dakota, even as they impact tribal communities. That's coming after the news. We're broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The Right Reverend Dr. Jonathan Foltz, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of South Dakota, recently issued a public statement regarding racial profiling in the state in light of a recent surge in immigration activity. The Diocese of South Dakota includes more than 50 congregations in tribal communities. We're spending this hour talking with faith leaders about how they provide pastoral support during chaotic times. I connected with the bishop via Zoom.
True confession, I'm a cradle Episcopalian. My father was an Episcopal priest. He went on to be the bishop of West Texas. I never thought that being a bishop would be of interest to me, only because over my time in ministry, I've seen the role of bishop become more and more administrative and less relational. I really love the relational aspect of ministry. This diocese is almost 100% relational. You know, we value and treasure relationships, and the issues that we talk about are serious life issues. South Dakota, some would describe us as being almost a third world state. Out of the 48 states, we're probably one of the most poorest regions, along with the dioceses that contain the Appalachians, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. So there's some real challenges to be addressed. And far best to address those challenges from the base of relationship first. Mm. Let's understand the need. Let's understand what's happening here. Let's understand what God is calling us to do here.
Yeah. I want to know something about your childhood and watching your father at work in Texas. Were there issues of immigration then that you remember being close to?
That is a really, really good question. Episcopal Migration Ministries, which has been affected by the recent turnoff of the spigot of federal funding, it would help settle immigrants who had been vetted to the nth degree, and help settle them in different parts of the United States. When we lived in Abilene, Texas for 5 years, Church of the Heavenly Rest in Abilene was responsible for settling numerous Cambodian refugees. And they would come in to Abilene, and I believe it was J.B. Fouché, God rest his soul, headed up this ministry. And you want to guess how much money and welfare these Cambodian families received from the state or had received from the city of Abilene?
I do not know.
Not a cent.
None.
Not a cent. We were able to find them housing. We were able to find them jobs. We were able to get the kids enrolled in school. They became our friends. They became our family. That was my first foray into the passions of and the plights of immigrants who were fleeing. My second and truly powerful experience with migration and with immigrants occurred in the the late 1980s, I don't have a specific date to offer, whereby the government had invited these refugees who were fleeing persecution from different places, South America and the like, to come. I believe this was under the first George Bush. But then they saw the numbers and they changed their mind. Mm. Glad you're here, but now we're going to send you back. Okay. Well, and we were living in Brownsville, Texas at the time. And for those who don't know where Brownsville is, that's on the southern tip of the state, around the border of Matamoros. And they took a Navy yard, an abandoned Navy yard, and made it into kind of a holding camp for these folks while they were waiting to be processed or sent back, because they wouldn't let them get jobs and they wouldn't let them travel to where they had relatives. They kept them there. And then there were others who came who weren't in that Navy yard, but they had taken up residence at this abandoned hotel called the Amber Motel, where they were sleeping anywhere from 6 to 8 in a room with one person staying up all night on guard to protect people who were sleeping. And our church adopted these folks as their own, and we're bringing them clothes and we're bringing them water and we're bringing them food. I mean, at the Amber Motel, all they could do was get a jug that used to hold milk, and they would take it over to the grocery store. There was a spigot and fill it with water, and that was the only source of water they had. And Christmas Eve, we brought out a communion for them to have a Christmas Eve service, for all of us to have a Christmas Eve service at the Amber Motel. They brought out a rusted air conditioned cover, covered it with this linen. The grandmothers were pointing at these young guys, go sweep up this parking lot. I'm like, sweep up a parking lot? And we were passing out presents and the like, and the which was a truthful, a truly joyful moment for me. And yet at the same time, and I was just sharing this story not that long ago, I remember a child was being presented with a present all nicely wrapped in this at the other, while another person was handing out candy, and that child opened up that present and it was empty. It was empty. Some jerk had taken a box, an empty box, and wrapped it up like a present to give to one of these kids. And the minute that the person passing out candy saw that, they were throwing candy in that box just as fast as they could to fill it up. That was one of my first really heartbreaking moments of seeing cruelty in play against the other. At that same church, there were five families who did not believe in this ministry, who did not believe that the church should be helping those who were outside of the United States. They were the five wealthiest families of the congregation. And they told the rector, who was my dad, and the vestry, if you don't stop doing this, we're going to take out our money from the church. Knowing full well that they would have to let the assistant go, the new assistant go, because it wouldn't be able to afford him, that it would cripple the congregation's budget in numerous ways. And they said, no. They said, we're not going to let you blackmail us. We're not going to let you try and use your money or your power to keep us from respecting the dignity of every human being and to seek justice, which is in our baptismal vows. And it's what they did. Well, they pulled their money, had let the assistant go. The church went on for another 2 or 3 years, and their budget became even larger, and the numbers became even stronger. So that to me was a real true learning moment about standing up for the poor and the marginalized and not letting those with power try and dictate, either through their money or through their presence, what the church should do. As I like to tell my clergy, when somebody brings that argument into play, you do what I want you to do, or else I'm going to, the conversation is really over, because we're no longer in conversation. We're now in making threats.
You posted a public letter recently about the impact that you're seeing in South Dakota, After the Trump administration and some of the very early executive orders and some community fear about ICE coming to people's doors. Tell me about that letter and what you wanted to say as leader of this church to the people who would read it.
Just a little bit of background. I was first alerted to the situations that I raised in that letter by one of our clergy. And he had called the diocesan office. I wasn't in town. We played telephone tag. He reported the same story to a clergy meeting. We have an online clergy meeting every Thursday morning for whoever wants to join. He and I did finally connect. He shared it with me, and his request, which I thought was a great request, he said, "Would you please issue a statement?" He said, our folks in reservations, and especially those who work for the tribe, need to know that we have their back, you know, that we stand with them, that we do not in any way, shape, form condone racial profiling or fear tactics. You know, we want them to know that they are not alone, which is a big part of our church's purpose in South Dakota, to be the church that many people don't expect us to be. And some folks would expect the church, well, yeah, that's somebody else's problem. We're not really going to. No, it is the dignity of every human being kind of problem. It's a seeking justice kind of problem. It is loving your neighbor. All about that. So my audience, the primary folks that I wrote that letter for, were our Native American siblings, and the tribal leaders and the elders, with a major component. And if I had to rewrite that letter, I think I would have stressed it a little stronger, to not be afraid. Not be afraid, which is a hard thing to do, and especially hard. And I admit this, and I confess it. It's hard for a white man who is not subjected to racial profiling to tell someone who is, "Don't be afraid." It's hard for me as an American citizen telling someone who wonders if their DACA status is going to be revoked to not be afraid. But what I can do is say, "I will stand with you, and we will fight this fear to together." Mm. So that was the primary reason. It was not for shock value. And when I share stories of things that I've read, and maybe the pastors who interviewed from Sioux Falls already shared with you the story of what happened at one of the high schools last week. When I share stories like that, I always make it clear to folks two things. One, I'm not sharing this story for shock value. I'm sharing it to you and for you so that you can be aware that things that you don't think would happen in South Dakota or the area of South Dakota actually can and are. We are not immune.
What are we called to do now in support of one another and of the stranger?
Oh, absolutely. I think first and foremost is to be as informed as possible. And that's one of the things that we're really stressing to our clergy and to the lay leaders who help to oversee congregations where we don't have clergy. Be as informed as possible. And things are happening so fast. This subject was covered at the meeting that I've been at for the past 3 days of the Executive Council of the Episcopal Church here in Baltimore. Things are coming at us so fast that even our chancellors for the Episcopal Church, fancy word for lawyers, are saying we're struggling to keep up with how to navigate. The Episcopal Church has responded very well through Episcopal Migration Ministries and our Office for Government Relationships to make folks aware of what their rights are, what to do if such and such happens, obeying the law, don't try to raise the tensions by escalating. how you can protect those who come to you for sanctuary. Is that even possible now? They're looking into, well, can you mark a room in your church as being private? Because if you mark a room in your church as being private, the authorities can still come in, but they will need a judicial warrant to do so. They will need to have a warrant signed by a judge. The ICE agents have what they call administrative warrants, I learned, where they can just write their own warrants. But to go into a place marked private, you have to have judicial. There's, they call them red cards. And maybe you've heard of them, Lori. Where they've got instructions in both English and Spanish so folks know what their rights are. Should you be approached, should you be accosted, these are your rights. And we've purchased some for our diocese and begun to pass them out. So a big part of it is to be aware, to stay on top of things. Don't put your head in the sand and don't run around as if you're panicking. Try and be as informed as possible and share that knowledge. Get that knowledge out. The tribal councils, I believe Rosebud is doing this, Sisseton is doing this, I'm sure the others are as well. Sharing what the ID cards for Native Americans look like with the government officials so that they know how to recognize them. You know, some of the reservations from what I've heard, you know, whereby there might have been a charge of $17 or something for a card, now they're giving them out for free. In some areas, let's get these folks empowered and educated. The other thing we can do is to advocate. And that's what it means to stand alongside and when called upon and when needed to speak for. You know, when we talk about the Holy Spirit being our advocate and guide, you know, the Holy Spirit will speak for us. And that's what we can do for the poor and the marginalized. You know, when their voices aren't being heard, we can add our voices to theirs and amplify the message that is coming across. And thirdly, and perhaps most importantly, we can love them. We can love them. Yeah. To let a person know that they have value, that they have worth, that they may be coming into this country for reasons that we can't even fathom or imagine. And if we were in their same shoes, and I thought of this when folks were coming into Brownsville, you know, and escaping the persecution that they were facing, would I not do everything in my power to get my child to safety? And Laura, if you don't mind my just kind of adding this, you asked a bit about how did my growing up years kind of form this? And I want to give my mom credit here too, because she was a kindergarten teacher in Brownsville. She taught kindergarten in what was probably the most southernmost public school in the 48 states. And some of her students were brought over every day by their parents carrying them on their shoulders across the river. I had better attendance than the kids who lived in Brownsville. And I remember her telling the story. I mean, she would spend a third of her salary providing workbooks and school supplies for all of her students, all of them. Some of the kids didn't even speak English who came in. And I remember the story when she said that some of the school officials from on high came in and said, "We want you to identify which of these students of yours are coming from across the river, because the school district doesn't want to supply them with milk, with free milk." And my mother said, "Over my dead body." And I just wonder, in this day and age, if she was still with us and if she was still teaching, and if a government agency came in and said, "Identify which of your students got," I would feel sorry for them. Yeah, I truly would.
That's Jonathan Foltz, Bishop of the Episcopal Diocese of South Dakota. After the break, more religious leaders from across the state. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. If something were rippling through your community, who might you turn to for guidance and answers? For many South Dakotans, the answer is calling or sending a Facebook message to their pastor. That's what our next two guests have experienced. Otto Garcia is a pastor at El Punto Es Servir, which offers Spanish language church services in Sioux Falls. He is also a city ambassador for the Hispanic community and a chaplain with the Sioux Falls Police Department. And Osmar Vinales is a pastor at the Church of Christ Shiloh Ebenezer Ministries. They sat down with me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Otto, welcome back to the studios here for SDPB. You've been here before because you do some interpretation for SDPB, correct?
Thank you very much, yes.
Tell us about yourself, though, because you have many roles that you play in the community.
First, I'm a happily married father, and a parent of three beautiful children. I'm also a pastor for the American Baptist Churches here in the state of South Dakota. With the point is to serve church. I'm the Spanish minister for the Punto Servir. I'm also a chaplain with the police and sheriff in the city of Sioux Falls. I'm a Sioux Falls city ambassador for the Hispanic community. And I'm also a captain with the United Nations Chaplain Department.
Yes. Well, thank you for stopping by today. Osmar, introduce yourself for us, please.
I'm also a father of three kids. And then being in the United States for the past 30 years, we're doing pastoring for Iglesia de Cristo Shiloh, Ebenezer Ministry that we're affiliated with, down in Guatemala. Actually, I'm first generation immigrant that came to Sioux Falls, and then I'm so happy. I'm so glad that, this beautiful community, in general, South Dakota being gathering us and giving to us, the opportunity to work with the Hispanic families in town. So,
yeah. All right. I have a ton of questions. Okay. And most of them are starting from the fact that we're living in an uncertain time. And we see a lot of posts on Facebook. I've heard stories about people who have gone missing because they believe they've been picked up by ICE and deported. I can't confirm any of those. So in general, Otto, we'll start with you. What is happening in the Spanish-speaking community that you're aware of as far as uncertainty, fear, or actual action being taken against of people who are here in South Dakota?
Okay, first, let me tell everybody who will listen to this, according that we as Latinos, Hispanics from different countries, we are hard workers. And many of us contribute to the economy of this great nation by working and paying taxes. They get deductions every year. Some of them may never be able to retire and get those funds that they've been taking every week. As a minister in city in community service, I get the opportunity to be contacted by many families. One family in particular who own a restaurant in this city, the wife called me because a black car came into the house and they took her husband, who is the owner and cook for this restaurant. So I contacted the Sioux Falls Police. They didn't have him. I contacted ICE. They took my information, and later they confirmed that he was detained with no bail. So I called the wife, and I told her, yes, your husband is being detained, and there's no bail, which means that he may be deported. He didn't have any, as far as we know, he didn't have any warrant or anything, but, I cannot speak freely because I don't know the legal situation right behind it. But that's one case. Other people that I know also, I know some who committed a crime. They were reported and they've been taken away. So you got people who are hard workers. You got criminals. So that's the situation going on. And last night, I was showing you, somebody sent me a post through Messenger that a high school student was asked for her birth certificate at Washington High School. Now, all of this is bringing a lot of tension within minorities. I understand that the job of the new administration is to get rid of those who are criminals, And I and we both as ministers agree they should be taken out, because whoever comes to this nation should set up an example, work hard, and should make this nation a better place with us being here. That's why we are, as ministers, we came not only to survive or make a living, but we understand that the calling of God for us is when wherever we are, we have to make that place better. And that's the role of the minister and father of a family. We want to improve this nation. I served in the U.S. Army for 7 years as a combat medic. I love this nation. I swore to protect this nation and the Constitution. So I'm in favor of respecting the law. But the problem that we are seeing as ministers and community leaders is that there's a fear among those who are honest, hardworking people. That's the fear that we sense. Many people are not sure if they're going to come and hear a knock at the door. Many of them don't know what to do. They don't know their rights. And we're going to get together with some leaders, you know, to educate the community. So that's, as far as my point of view, that's what's going on. There's a fear among the Spanish community. I know there are some who love their employees, those who come from other countries. But I understand that there are some who hate us. You know, they don't want to see us here in this nation. And they forgot that they were not born original from the U.S. They also came from other places from the world. So all of us are immigrants, except the natives. Those are the true Americans who were born original in this land, and they grew up in this land. So if you're not a native, sorry to bust your bubble, you're an immigrant. But, you know, and I respect that. And our job is not to judge, condemn, but is to lift up this nation in prayer and be the best citizens that we can.
Asmar, what would you add to what he said there about what's happening in the Spanish-speaking or Latino community right now?
Well, actually, our community, you know, Hispanic community, is being in terrific fear. You know what I mean? It's being, right now, families are totally insecure, not only from new president is coming up with, but this is not only that people came to Sioux Falls, it don't matter their status, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It don't matter their status, but also people that have been here for so many years, people that already established, you know, a business, like these two couple that Pastor Otto was mentioning about, you know, people that came to Sioux Falls with the mentality that not only having a good life, but also, you know, make the community grow, right? In different prospects, you can grow the community in business, you can grow the community as a hardworking, you can grow the community, you know, with the better economy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When I hear someone out there that they open a business as a Hispanic, believe me, my heart turns up. My heart turns into being so happy that as an immigrant, as a people probably in their lifestyle back and don't matter where they come from, are with insufficient funds and come to United States and open the doors, you know, I'm so happy to see people like that. And also, don't get me wrong, but I mean, when we hear there is out there people that only come to United States with the mentality, right, they just stolen, killing, made others' life, you know, miserable, that's totally not right. And I'm agreed, you know, with some of the authorities in town that they want to just get rid of it, you know, that kind of person, which is right, you know. Number two, something the problem is probably the government haven't forget lately, right, that we as pastors, Otto, you mentioned, you know, that we cooperate with the authorities in town to how we cooperate with them. You know, every person that comes to save in Christ, it's out of the type of crime. It's out of the, you know, those attitudes that it doesn't really cooperate with the community. So we also help him, you know, the police department. We also help him, everyone in that kind of position right now. With those rules, basically, that the president, we totally respect and we pray for him, you know, that the people are gathering him, it doesn't have a really bad heart. If it comes to the Bible, basically the Bible in Psalm chapter 146, verses 14, it tells directly from God who rules the world, not only one country, the whole creation, right? Put him in Israel's heart and say, listen, when your neighbor comes over to you, you should love him. You should love to them, right? Unfortunately, right now, it's not the situation. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, right now, it seems like Hispanic community is the target, you know? It don't matter. It don't matter if they're legal or illegal. You know, like Otto was talking to you right now a few minutes ago, a few seconds ago, that there's a girl, you know, that this Washington High School, their authorities asking for her birth certification, you know. I mean, this is the first time I heard after Mr. Trump has been in chair. So not even in the past, not even I like already talked to you that we are here for the past 30 years in this South Dakota state. I never experienced any fear like today.
Pastor Otto, what are people's rights? What do you have to show, prove? What questions do you have to answer? What do you want people to know about the rights that they have? Because even if you are a criminal, and I hear very clearly what you're saying, that you say criminals should be dealt with, mm-hmm. and people who come here with bad intentions to commit violence and activity that would be punished should be punished. But I would add that these people in America also have rights to due process and legal representation and things like that. So for all citizens, what are you telling people? Do they have to show a birth certificate? Okay. Do you have to answer questions?
We as ministers teach people to respect authority. Mm-hmm. Me as a pastor, I will never approve or agree with people going to march and make manifestations. I always tell people, you don't change anything by marching. You can stop traffic for a few hours, close that street for a few hours, but you didn't gain anything. You didn't change a law. You didn't change anything going on. So number one, we have to respect the law. Sometimes I don't have been a U.S. citizen since I came in 1977. I came under Jimmy Carter and you know, those presidents after him. And I may not agree with the president, but the Bible tells me to respect the position. You got to understand when the book of Romans was written, the church was being persecuted by the Roman Empire. And in Romans 13, Paul tells the believers, respect the authority, pray for them. And they were killing the believers. So the church, the job of the church is not to arise against a government, it's to pray for it, that better laws may pass in favor of those who need it. So number one, I don't agree with breaking the law. I'm 100% a law-abiding citizen. But when it comes to the immigrant, we have to understand one thing I always tell people. The moment we came into this nation without a visa and we decided to go across the river or plane or whichever way you came, you knew that you were breaking a law. That's number one. Let it be a misdemeanor, let it be whatever. The moment we came illegally into a nation, we're breaking a law. If I go into the pastor's house, Pastor Osmar, and I break into his house, that's a crime. Why? Because I'm trespassing. So the people who come to the U.S., they have to understand, number one, if you did not come with an authorized visa, you came illegally, that's a crime. But once we are in this part of the States, once we come in, we have to respect the law. Are there rights for us? Yes, the Constitution of the United States is not only for U.S. citizens. If you read the Constitution, the moment you are in American soil, on American ground, there are rights for you as a human being. And that's something that I love about this nation. So to say they have no right, The Constitution guarantees protection and rights to anybody who dwells in the U.S. And that started with the slavery. When the slavery came and was abolished, those slaves were brought from other countries into the Americas. So the Constitution is not only to protect the U.S. citizen, but those who are on American soil. We may not have all the full rights as a U.S. citizen, but as humans, we have certain rights. I'm going to get together with Attorney Tenisa. She's an immigration attorney. We're going to have a meeting with her because we need to educate the community. What should you do if immigration comes? Number one, I tell people, if they come looking for a criminal, do not protect the criminal because then you're involved in something else. If they come and they ask, you know, let's say I'm a pastor, and they ask for a member, and I know that he broke the law, or there's a warrant for him, I'm not going to risk the whole church community for one person. I will tell him, you know what, my brother, sorry, but these are consequences of committing crimes. God forgave you the sin, but now you got to face consequences. I'm not going to close the door and oppose authority. Hey, they're coming for somebody in specific, they have a legal warrant for his arrest. My job as a minister is to say, okay, here he is, take him. My job is to protect the other families. I'm not going to go fighting with authorities for one person who broke the law, and legally they had to remove him from the nation. That's not my job. My job is to obey the law, not to break it. Now, my problem would be if they come and they want to take everybody who has not broken the law, that's a different story. That's where we have to go with legal attorneys and find out exactly what can we do not to break the law, but to see how the law will favor us as ministers.
Are you able to track, you mentioned the woman whose husband was detained by ICE. Is there any paper trail afterwards as far as what's happening?
We don't know.
If he has access to a lawyer, if she was able to get a lawyer, would that lawyer be able to help that person?
It could help, but the problem is that in my case, I cannot get involved too much. Number one, because my position with the law enforcement, as a chaplain, I'm limited to get involved. I have to respect the law. Second, the best person to get involved will be the wife. Mm-hmm. She will be the one that will need to contact an attorney and get any help she can. I told her where he is. You know, he's being detained. I cannot give any more information. And another reason, I was not giving any information. Mm-hmm. Why was he detained? I have no idea.
Right. Yeah, and we do have invitations out to Tanisa Islam, another immigration attorney, and ICE representatives as well to come help us talk about this process. And I do want to go back to, you know, you mentioned crossing into a country illegally. It is legal to seek asylum.
Yes.
And that is, I think, always important to bring up to people that many people who are here presented themselves as asylum seekers and now are perhaps being sent back. Getting here without the paperwork is more complicated than, you know, painting a picture of someone sneaking across a river. So I want to be very clear about that, too. Pastor Osmar, what would you add to this this idea of, you know, obeying the law, but then also trying to prepare in advance for the ways that you might be confronted with someone who's not in immigration, but you are afraid that they are because someone's harassing you now or somebody says something to you, or do you go to work? Do you stay home? It's not, again, not quite as easy to say, well, if you didn't break the law, you don't have anything to worry about.
Right. It's a good question. You know, added on Pastor Otto was talking about. And then it's very, on the same time, and the other side too, it's very complicated. You know what I mean? Beginning with Otto was saying that many people that are already here in the United States, they don't have no legal education. You know what I mean? They don't have legal education. One, because they don't know. One, because someone else is not telling them, you know, what to do, what the procedures are after let's say, and you know, let's say, and after they cross illegally, right? Many of the people that are in the United States had them the advantage coming over to the United States with visa, but some others that came to the United States without visa, right? But like I said, you know, that I think as the 14th Amendment or United States Constitutions tells the people the rights. It tells us the rights that one doesn't have no documents, that they also got the rights to in certain aspects, you know, of legal that they can definitely approach, you know, the person that is all looking or asking for either legal documentations or whatever. So, like I said, as everyone in the United States that are either way Latinos or another color, another race, they do have the rights. They do have rights. We do have rights, you know. And so, like as Otto was telling, you know, the biggest problem is educations. I've been having experience, you know, people from as a church, people from Central America, Honduras, Guatemalans, even Venezuelans right now that are already here. They don't educate well back in their countries. So when they come over to, you know, first world country, they think they're still living, you know, in the past. They're still living in their old culture. They're still living in their old education. And then number two, I think right now too, it's also that ministries, we trying to help a little bit, you know, with these people that are gathering with us, you know, to worship God. So, yeah, I would say, you know, probably right now, anyone who are in this country and that kind of situation, they got the rights.
We'll continue this conversation after a short break. But first, you heard both pastors reference a viral Facebook post. The post claimed a high school student was asked by the Sioux Falls School District for a birth certificate to check their immigration status. The district put out this statement last week. A recent Facebook post regarding Washington High School falsely claims a routine request for a birth certificate was related to immigration status. State law requires all public school students to have a birth certificate on file within 30 days of enrollment. When required records are missing from student files, school staff regularly attempt to contact families before sending the required information to the state's attorney. These requests are made solely to ensure compliance with state law and to maintain complete student records. They are in no way related to immigration enforcement. We are committed to protecting the privacy of our students and their families. Please reach out to your child's school or the district office with any questions rather than relying on social media for accurate information. We appreciate your cooperation in keeping student records up to date. That is the statement put out by the Sioux Falls School District earlier this month. More of our conversation with Pastors Garcia and Vinales up next. You're on Listener Supported, SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Let's get back to our conversation with Pastors Otto Garcia and Osmar Vinales. Garcia is a pastor at El Punto Es Servir and a city ambassador for the Hispanic community in Sioux Falls. He's also a chaplain with the Sioux Falls Police Department. And Vinales is a pastor at the Church of Christ Shiloh Ebenezer Ministries. I want to give you some chances to speak in Spanish to listeners who might be following along but would understand you better in Spanish. But first, was there anything else, Pastor Otto, that you wanted to add to this conversation today? We hope to have you back in the future as we continue these conversations. But for today, anything that is top of mind for you that feels particularly urgent right now?
Number one, what I tell people is getting an attorney. Number one, getting an attorney, but they tell me I don't qualify. Getting an attorney. Mm-hmm. Because if the moment you are detained, you got better chances of being released if you have a legal case open. Second, just because you came looking for asylum, it doesn't give you the right to break any law. I tell people, don't go driving under the influence of anything. Don't get into fights. I mean, respect the law as much as you can. Because if you come to this nation, you gotta respect the law. Mm-hmm. So that's the advice I tell people. Respect the law, get an attorney. And if you don't know where to go out, they always come to me. I try, you know, since I'm a city ambassador, I know every office, every organization within the city. I try to refer them. If I don't know the answer, I call 211. Mm-hmm. And I told them, I have this family is going through this, and they would give me advice of referrals where to send them. but the community needs help from the Hispanic leaders. So I believe this is the time when all minorities should come together. And I always tell people, remember, number one, we are a financial force behind the city. We buy stuff, we pay taxes. And what will happen if for 1 week Hispanics or any minority, all minorities, would not shop around for 1 week at any store, any restaurant? What will happen if for 1 week no minority child will go to school? I guarantee that will hurt more than anything else. And that's the language people understand. So as a leader, I tell people, hey, it's true, many of us are not legal, but the city depends on our dollars. We are giving the city money. And many of us are not asking for help. Okay, so number one, don't feel like we don't mean anything. We are the financial force behind the city. Every worker in every farm, every shop, every store, but let it be legal or illegal, they're paying taxes. And the moment this is gone, trust me, the city is not going to do so good.
Final thoughts?
Well, I'm just telling, you know, everyone that, especially in the Hispanic community, to be calm, right? To be keeping praying, keeping on God's hands, right? He's our shields, he's cover us also. But I mean, trying to be more respectful to others. Unless we get into it, you know, in problems and troubles, more safe we're gonna be. Mm-hmm. But saved, not at all. Safe, not at all, because right now, you know, with those immigration issues and ICE is being knocking doors and all that. So I'm sure people is so scared around there. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. In Spanish, anything that you wanted to say to people who've been listening in English but perhaps could understand the conversation in Spanish, Pastor Otto?
Sí, para los que hablan nuestro idioma, número uno, queremos decirles que usted tiene derechos. Vamos a hacer una reunión con la abogada Tenisa, los ministros y los líderes, para que usted sepa qué derechos tiene y podamos educarnos mejor. El problema de nuestra comunidad es que no estamos educados correctamente y eso trae más temor. Y otro favor a los que nos están escuchando, no pongamos temor a nuestra comunidad. No traigamos mala información, que es la causa número uno del temor aquí. Lo que tenemos que hacer es educarnos, encomendarnos a Dios y respetar las leyes. Pastor Osmar.
Gracias ante todo, cada uno de ustedes, por darme la oportunidad de estar acá. Así es de que, por favor, cada uno de ustedes que se encuentran en esta ciudad, no teman, no tengan temor, no se dejen, en cierta manera, influenciar por noticias que desde otra perspectiva, el único objetivo que tienen es de traer una mentalidad amarillista. Como dijo el pastor Otto, eduquémonos, busquemos ayuda. Otto está acá en varias organizaciones. Si se pueden acercar con él, pueden pedir información de él. Me imagino que Otto al final va a dar su información, dónde lo pueden contactar o a qué agencia con ayuda pueden ustedes acercarse. Así de que, por favor, de una manera muy especial, manténganse más que todo calmados y pidámosle a Dios, acerquémonos a Dios, que es lo más importante, acerquémonos a Dios, busquen una congregación, busquen una iglesia, busquen un ministro que les pueda también asesorar y ayudar. Así de que muchas gracias.
That's Otto García and Osmar Vinales. Both are pastors who serve the Spanish-speaking community in Sioux Falls. That's our show for today. We hope that it served you. We have many more conversations about immigration coming up on In the Moment. If you have an angle you would like us to pursue, send us an email, inthemoment@sdpb.org. From all of us at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thanks for listening.